I was going to therapy, antidepressants, like the whole thing.
Oh yeah,
it was not fun. It was brutal. COVID hits. I'm like down in the dumps again. There were these other people just doing these skits. You know, I look like shit. I feel like shit. Now I'm gonna like, hi, how are you? And eventually, I was just like, shit. And it just worked, man. Right out of the gate, 50, 100, 200,000, 250,000. What the is going on?
All right, welcome back. So the problem right now we're experiencing is we're going through a transition of names, so we don't really know what to call this podcast. So welcome back, everybody, to
Johnny Ugets.
Johnny, whatever. Welcome back, everybody. Here with Nikki Smigs. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me, bro.
Chicago to New York. Biggest differences. What do we got?
Oh, dude. I feel like I tell everybody it's honestly apples and oranges. It's like New York's five cities in one. Chicago's like the population of Brooklyn. I mean, it's nuts here, bro.
I didn't realize how small Chicago was.
Yeah. I mean, the city population is the same as Brooklyn, but like, it's just a lot more. I mean, it's the Midwest. It's more spread out. Traffic sucks, but it's not as stressful, I guess, if you will.
But you're not, you're from Arlington Heights. Is that Chicago?
Northwest suburbs.
So what is that? Yeah. Is that in Chicago? How does that work?
It's not, same county, I guess, but no, it's like a Northwest suburb. It's like 3-4 suburbs northwest of the city. Yeah, I was living there in Chicago when I moved here. So right. I guess that's kind of – do people supposed to say the name of the suburb, you think, when they leave a bigger city?
Well, the question –
because I get shit all the time. Like, you know, what's the capital letter, lowercase letter, capital letter, lowercase letter?
Yeah.
I'm from Chicago. I'm like, okay, all right, you got me. Like, no one knows what the fuck Arlington Heights is.
Well, it's like people that are from Boston.
Right.
And you're not. You're like a half hour from Boston. Stop saying that. That's like me saying I'm from New York City and I live in Jersey. Or right. Like being from Staten Island and being like, I'm in New York City.
Problem with saying free from Jersey, the way like you look and you go like halfway across the country, you're just going to think Seaside Heights. Like, you know, and it's like, so should you say New York? If you, I mean, where'd you grow up? How far from the city?
Wayne. So I was about 40 minutes from New York City.
That's west. Considered metropolitan New York City, right? I know. Jersey guys.
I would say to you maybe from being,
that's
if
what
you
I'm
were
saying.
From Chicago.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, If you met someone who didn't know anything about New Jersey, like, would you, like, for this, like, culturally just say, like, I'm from a suburb of...
Because I'm embarrassed.
New York City. No. Just, like, so for context for them. So they, because it's all stereotypes.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm from Jersey. Johnny Rondi. Like, I imagine people just think Jersey Shore.
Did you? So coming from Chicago,
no,
did you think?
I didn't, because I knew, I got family here. I've been here and shit before. But, like, you met someone in the middle of nowhere. And they were like... You told them where you're from. I don't know. What's your experience?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would rep Jersey pretty hard. I would never say I'm from New York City.
Right.
Because I'm not, and the culture is very different.
Right. Yeah, that, you know? That doesn't surprise me.
But all. I would assume the Arlington Heights culture is pretty similar to the Chicago culture.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, my thing is I don't want to have to explain, like, where it is.
Yeah.
You know? Because once I say a suburb, now it's like... Oh, I think I was in like Downers Grove once. Is that close to? It's like, I'm just going to say
yeah,
it in fucking
just
city,
keep
you know?
And say Chicago.
If anything, like it's where Jimmy Garoppolo's from, Sebastian Maniscalco's from. I'm probably missing a couple people. Definitely am. But yeah, dude, I just kind of say Chicago. And then I let people from back home give me shit that I'm not a city kid. And it's like, okay, fine. You know, fine. It's
whatever.
All good. Yeah.
Speaking of Sebastian Maniscalco, yeah. That was your claim to fame, right? You blew up on social. You were on the news. You were on Jay Leno.
Yeah.
Because of your Sebastian impression. Does everybody sound like that where you're from?
No. I would say there's like a couple Chicago Italian accents. My family happens to have pretty much that. So it's not really, it wasn't really even an impression for me. It didn't feel like one, at least. But it was just like that part of COVID. It was like April, May, 2020. There's nothing else going on. I'm like, I was never like impressions kid. Like I knew how to do three voices and I just made like skits with those three characters and right. It just took off, bro. So nothing else to do. Everyone's scrolling. It just kind of worked, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's stupid. But
you met him through this though.
Yeah. Yeah, not through like, love the impression, bro. Like, let's go get coffee. Like, it was more like just through events. And where did I fucking meet him? His premiere, his About My Father, the movie with De Niro. Got invited to that. Met him at the after party. He's exactly who you'd think he'd be, like in person. He's just all business, not the most like touchy-feely personal
guy. I've heard that.
Which is like, good for him. You know, he's doing what he wants.
Well, the funny part is like, he literally says that. Like, he says it in his skits and skit. I don't like people. I don't want to talk to you. So then people are surprised when he doesn't want to talk. He said it. He told you that.
It's hard with comedy because it's true that thoughts on stage are coming from another place, whether it's a really dark joke or something that might seem true that's not. Like, every comic's got a different delivery and they have different upbringings, but they also play characters. So it's like, I think for stand-up comic audiences, it's hard to gauge, like, this person's being really honest. I know this is true about them. This person sounds really honest. Does not, it could be all fucking fake.
Right.
The whole act could be fake. It's an act. But with Sebastian, it is true. Like, he's not social butterfly.
Doesn't seem like it. Was he your inspiration? Because he blew up, I want to say, prior to COVID, right?
2018? Yeah, his Netflix special is what everyone talks about. It's like 2014. He's wearing that magenta sweater, you know, which was hysterical. So, yeah. I went to a book signing of his in Chicago in 2018. Met him there, but I wasn't doing anything. I was working, selling bread, food service sales.
So was he your inspiration to get in?
For sure. I read his book. Probably the only book I ever read, actually, was his. And it was just like this nobody kid from Arlington Heights with a college degree who didn't like the corporate world. And like he did it, you know. So I actually started taking Second City classes, improv classes in Chicago, and fell in love with it. And I was like, I got to get out. I got to get out of this corporate world somehow. And then timing wise, it just all, as you know, it all just works out. My last improv show at Second City was a week before lockdown. So I was like ready to like do another theater, take more classes, get headshots, whatever the hell that meant. And then boom, bro, I'm like, fuck this. Like, just depression, the whole thing, you know?
Yeah.
And then my family just talked me into posting dumb shit on TikTok.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Who, your dad told you to do it?
My parents and my brother and sister, honestly. I was a mess, dude. I put on like 15 pounds. I mean, all of us were. Pale, fucking hair was gone. Playing Call of Duty, just drinking every night. It was stupid. But where the fuck was I? It was, they talked me into it. My brother actually went viral before I did. One video, and then he hung it up after. It's so Gen Z. It might be like, I don't give a fuck. He's he just turned 24.
He's young.
Yeah. Mm. How old are you?
28.
That's right. Okay.
How old are you?
30. Just turned 30.
Same age.
Do I look older? I know. I agree.
It sucks.
Doesn't matter.
That number is tough.
Yeah. You know what? It is, but it's like, I feel like I'm 15 still.
I feel like 18 is
old. I don't give a shit. I think women are different with the timeline shit, but dude, like,
I don't care.
If anything this job's taught me, look at like Ian McKellen, he's a nobody until he's 65 years old. Like, I'm signing up for that career. Like, the dream is acting. It's always has been. That's what like inspired me to take improv classes. And Sebastian was the one that was like, okay, this is possible, to tie it back to that.
Okay. So you're, so if you had to choose, it would be acting.
Yeah, bro. I love acting.
Okay.
Yeah. I love the, just character work and, doing auditions and stuff. But like I was saying earlier, it's this combination of things that all kind of, everyone's kind of in that boat right now, whether you were a comic before COVID, creator before COVID, some are getting on stage, some are now like posting like crazy. Everyone's got a podcast. Like, it's kind of just in a good way, a free for all. You can kind of make of what you want. So,
your family convinces you, all three of them, all four of them say you should be posting
honestly
on social.
Yeah, because they saw how much I loved Second City and how unhappy I was. Like, I had a recruiting job for a year, 2 years in advertising, and then a year doing food service sales. And they just saw how like happy I was. Like, for the first time, I was going to therapy, antidepressants, like the whole thing. It was not fun. It was brutal. And then I fall in love with this improv thing. And it's like where Steve Carell, Chris Farley, Tina Fey, okay. Not that I was on the same stage as them, but like, I just want to take classes there. And COVID hits, I'm like down in the dumps again. And there were these other people just doing these skits. Like, I think Evan Berger was his name. Might be butchering it. He just did like Trump, Obama, and who was it? Bush? Trump, Obama,
Ian Berger, you said?
Evan Berger. He was like, Trump, Obama, and Bush play hide and seek.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, I thought TikTok was like teenage chicks, the thirst trap, like Gen Z shit. You know, like, right. Oh, fuck, I'm too good for like that shit. Very negative attitude. And then I started seeing that. My family was like, yo, you should do the walking soprano Maniscalco. I'm like, no, I'm not. That's so stupid. Like, I'm not. That's just weird. In my parents' basement, I'm going to, you know, I look like shit. I feel like shit. Now I'm going to like, hi, how are you, Tony? Like, is it, you know, I didn't know what the fuck to do. And then
that's pretty good.
And then eventually they were like, you gotta find the positive in this situation. Like everyone's, no one's going anywhere. Like, this is the situation we're in, you know, sack up, like, make of this what you will, kind of thing. So I props to them for sure. But,
well, props to you too, man. And I appreciate you being so honest about your depression and what you experienced. Was it one video that really changed your perspective on life? Because I would assume when you're depressed or you're feeling depressed, nothing excites you. You wake up every day, you're what's the fucking point?
Yeah.
Did that immediately switch when you felt, oh my God, people actually enjoy the content I'm putting out there? Or was it a gradual? Oh,
I wouldn't say I was like going to therapy on meds when COVID started. I was just like, what I imagine like most other people, just like that week between Christmas and New Year's, that was supposed to be this fun, like vacation feel, was quickly like, oh fuck, like we can't go to bars.
Now what?
I can't fly. Like I can't see my grandmother. Like it sucked. It fucking sucked. It was also just like confidence. Let's be honest. Like I'm comfortable public speaking, but like making these videos, like all those Italian family thoughts run through your head. Like, what's so-and-so going to think of this or that? And eventually I was just like, fuck it. Like, who fucking cares? So my sister convinced me to post on Instagram as well as TikTok. So I was simultaneously posting on my personal account and TikTok. Looking back, it just gets sillier and sillier. And it just worked, man. Like right out of the gate, TikTok was 50, 100, 200,000, 250,000. What the fuck is going on? You know, but that was a lot of people. So it was a blessing, man.
So, okay. You mentioned that you had already been coming out of what you would consider your depressive state.
Oh yeah. It was probably like 2 years prior. I was like 25, 26 when I was like, all right, like therapy's done, 6 months, done with the meds and shit like that. Got a better job. And then, fell in love with Second City when I was doing
Is that what job. You think helped the most?
Definitely a combination of that. My sister actually took me to the show where I first saw it. And so props to her. I was working for Paramount, actually. At the time, it was Viacom and Viacom CBS. I was doing like lowest of the totem pole Walmart ad placements. So basically like Walmart wants to run ads. If it's on a kid's show, like Nickelodeon, like make sure there's no like soda, sugary drinks in it. Like, right. So I would lock like the ad, very Excel bullshit, but like a lot of it was like digital advertising. And a lot of it was back end, like Excel management of like video completion rates and like all the shit that we talk about now. Like YouTube and shit. So I started Second City. I got casted in some like low level show. Long story short, my boss let me like skip 6 Wednesday mornings in a row to go like rehearse for this show. And I was like, oh, they're even fucking behind me. Like this massive, you know, at the time, I guess $15 billion company or whatever. And props to them. So like, yeah, the Second City and then like my job letting me take off 6 mornings in a row, like 6 Wednesdays in a row. Fucking help.
You think you needed that validation from other people to kind of prove to yourself
for sure,
that you did it?
Dude, my mom's side, family plumbing business, my dad's side, all Chicago public school teachers. I'm like, I got to get a pension, right. I need 401k or just insurance stability, the whole thing. And eventually you just get Jim Carrey's quote about depression is my favorite by far. It's just like your body's tired of playing this character, you know? And I just kind of felt like that, like what's holding you back? So good timing, man.
So you think maybe just like releasing the pressure of being something you're not helped you with depression?
100%. That's exactly what it is. It's just being honest with yourself. It's why you're not happy and just trying to do things that make you happy. It's the first thing. I don't know if you've done the therapy circuit or any of that shit, but like the first thing they tell you is you have to force yourself to do shit. You have to one foot in front of the other. Fucking get yourself to the gym, you know, the whole thing. Not to get too into it, but
you can get too into
it's,
it.
It's sorry, yeah. It's I wouldn't put it on my worst enemy, to be honest with you. It's brutal, but you got to go through shit like that, to have like introspective thoughts for yourself and like really tell yourself what makes you happy and navigate that. You know,
do you? Do you reflect?
I never talked about this in a podcast before. I don't give a shit. But no one's ever really let me run with it, I guess.
I love it, man. And not that I love that you went through it. I love that you're able to speak about it now from a better
215 part. Pounds.
Yeah, this is great, man. Keep
donuts
going.
For breakfast again? No.
No, it's you're it's because true. You're probably very honest
about
people,
it. It's, it's exactly like I've talked about it on stage before and shit. But like, it's also just fucked up just how more normal like the male suicide rate is, like in the 20s especially, bro. It's fucking long-term goal would be like some nonprofit for mental health for dudes in their 20s, because I think it's just undervalued.
Why do you think suicide rates are increasing for males in their
20s? No, for a fact, like kids as a whole, social media, like the parallels are ridiculous. Yeah. Between like the growth of social and like daily active users and the rates. But the social media is... I don't have to tell you. I think it's toxic for a ton of people. Really fucking toxic. Constantly comparing themselves, you know, not to like, I don't look at it in a negative light, but I mean, I go through like bouts of like, I should have been doing that, or like, that's funnier than this, or all that shit. I mean, look at like weddings and shit, bro. Everyone, it's like absurd.
I think two things, like you just said. Number one, you refer to Jim Carrey's, you know, depression is stemming from pretending to be something you're not, right? And not being able to admit that. I think the problem with social media is you got to think about the brain is so malleable from like 20 to 25, right? That's when you're supposed to learn about yourself.
Yeah.
And you start to create this character about yourself by watching other people. And that may not be who you really are. Exactly. And then you go through like this crisis of, I don't even know who I am because I've pretended for so long. And I thought I liked being like this guy, but I don't really like myself right now. And I don't know how to revert back to who I was, because who I was me as a fucking kid. Can I really revert back to that person?
Spot on. And my dad's been in advertising for 35, 36 years. So a lot of it was like, I'm getting a marketing degree. I want to be a CMO. I want to get my MBA. I'm the oldest sibling. So like, I mean, you know how it is. Obviously with pops, like you respect them. You want to not please them, but it's your comfort level for a certain amount of time. And then you get real world experience and you're like, holy fuck, like, I got to shave every day, like for this guy, this fucking guy, he's cheating on his wife and I'm taking orders from him. Like I'm not, it's just the corporate world. I'm not a red tape guy, you know, I'm more creative than I thought mentally than, meant for the business world and shit. But, a lot of it too was Rogan's podcast, like graduating college in 16. I remember watching that when I was working full time. And just seeing that grow and the comics go on and tell their story and shit. It's like, it was an eye opening, the flip side at the time of like the benefit of social media being like, not anyone can make it, but these are just regular fucking people. Like that long form podcast, you could argue is crucial for everybody because it wasn't just like this 20, 30 minute, news segment type of interviews on podcasts. Like you actually got to know this person, get the, you know, pull the curtain back kind of thing. And it's like regular dudes, man, regular fucking people.
Can you reflect on any one interview that like really did change your mind as far as that? Like, wow, if this person could do it.
People on Rogan and shit like that.
Or whatever, social media.
All of them. I think about Second City. I think about Steve Carell. Like he was 40 when he did 40-year-old version. He was doing Brown's Chicken commercials at 38. His agent said quit. Like John Krasinski, also in The Office. He was ready to move back to Boston. You know, he got like you hear about this shit because of, whether it's a podcast or like that stupid real short clip with the dramatic ass music on the Late Show or whatever. You just get exposed to like all these people you had on pedestals. And CEOs too. Like you watch a documentary on Netflix that you couldn't watch before you were working corporate and you find out that Elon Musk was bankrupt like for 15 years, like SpaceX was blowing up in the sky. Like, so all that stuff adds up. And I think it benefits everybody in a way, because you, the good part of social media is pulling the curtain back is like, everyone's just a fucking regular person.
Yeah.
It's all, everyone's got fucking problems. Everyone's got fucking failures. Like, make it happen if you want, especially with the internet. So been fortunate.
Yeah. Well, I think
is the this less on the whiteboard, by
this
the
whiteboard is not okay. Depression. Check that one off. I did my research. No,
I don't care, bro.
The funny part is that I think because we're older, we're able to, you know, pull the curtains back a little bit.
Yeah.
But you do have to, if you're young, acknowledge that social media is, it's an entertainment platform. It's not somebody's real life. Yeah. And if you do feel yourself upset about, I'm not ever going to be like that person, take a step back and realize that that's all it is. Just like an actor in a movie isn't right. that person. Neither is this social media character that they're portraying online.
It's definitely hard, you know, like you're totally right. But sometimes, like, again, like a stand-up audience is kind of like a social audience. Like, is this person doing a bit, telling a joke? Are they in character? Is their entire persona their character? Like this dude, the fuck's his name? 26-year-old bachelor in DC, Tony Pink Dick. I'll have to look it up, but
what does he do?
He's like, he does these day in the life videos. And I don't know for a fact, people that know him well probably think I'm an idiot for not knowing this, but the whole thing I think is a parody of like day in the life videos.
Oh, really?
Because he's just putting his suit on. He's making, then I had, and he's like holding the camera like way, like it's like absurdly positive and happy. That's like funny. Everyone should care what this dude's doing all the fucking time.
He's
hysterical. And it, just one example of a character who might not be a character, but maybe he is. Like prime example, like people that aren't in this world, like I have to like remind myself, people don't know if it's an act or if it's real or if they're trying to show off or if they're actually happy in their relationship. Like
right.
for kids that are in their teens, bro, like that, you know, it's gotta be hard.
I can't imagine.
I'm not envious of that world to grow up in at all. You know, wow. I feel like we're almost at the perfect age. I say this all the time. Like I didn't get a cell phone until high school. I didn't get a smartphone till like junior year of high school. So for the first 14 years of my life, there was no screens.
Yeah.
Like, and I can't imagine if I was any younger, you were 12. Right. iPhone came out when I was 12. You were 10. Like,
yeah.
I'm thankful for that, bro.
I think it makes it a little bit easier for us to detach, you know, because I'd be caught up with the bullshit and like,
you know, the difference.
Put my phone away.
You saw two worlds.
I think you know the importance, you know, you know the importance the of social interaction and shit like that.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, speaking of that, I think you as a stand-up comedian, that has to be one of the hardest things to do ever. Like public speaking is one thing. I don't know, like a professional sport, like a wrestling match is one thing. Being on stage and watching people bomb has to be the most embarrassing feeling for everybody in the room. And you talk about not wanting it, not wishing on their worst enemy. Nobody in that room wants you to fail. I don't care if that person hated you.
Yeah.
If they walked in that room and watched you bomb on stage, they do not feel good about that.
Some people do.
You think?
Oh, for sure. Ugh. Some people, I see it all the time. Like they just, they make me laugh guy. There's always a make me laugh guy. There's always some guy who's too good to laugh.
That's a guy who's never been on stage.
Oh, well, or just the dude who's miserable. Like truthfully, the guy's just fucking miserable. Like I remember I did a show, you know, Jessica Kirsten, she's, does a shit ton of crowd work, lesbian, Jewish comic. And that's part of her act. I'm not categorizing her or whatever, but what should I not have said there?
No, I'm moving my mic. He gets mad at me.
Like, this guy's a lesbian Jew. He's about to kick my ass.
Like, no, keep going. You named like every comic in New York City. Like, yeah, lesbian. All right, that narrows it down.
No, she's, I worked with her a couple of times and I remember we did this show. It was in Jersey. It was awful. It was a diner off of some like county highway, middle of fucking nowhere. It's just interesting audience. I wouldn't call them the New York Metro, you know.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if it's Central Jersey or not that far,
we
whatever.
Don't claim them, whoever, you don't claim whoever them. Was.
This dude, the entire fucking time, was just like this. Like, and she closed the show. She murdered. She's been on Rogan like three times. She's huge. And I go up, like seven other comics go up, and you know, we're all doing okay. I'll speak for myself, did okay. And then she goes up and just 10 minutes just looked at this guy. Sir, I have dicks. I have dildos in my sock drawer bigger than your fucking penis. Okay. And just like and he eventually just chuckled, took his food and left.
So it, she knew he was that guy.
Oh yeah. And that's what like, that's what a veteran comic looks for, is to find some way to break someone's pain, to break someone's tension, break some, whatever that is. Whatever art form stand up is, I just saw it. And it was Jesse just like destroying this fucking guy. And he was a douchebag. He totally was, but he showed up for a reason, whether he wants to admit it or not. He was looking for a release and was stubborn for the first 10 comics. And then she got up there and called his bluff, and it was fucking hilarious. It was hilarious.
Would you now, cause I'm assuming you said it was a couple of years back, yeah, as a more seasoned comic, would you attack him? Not attack him, but would you go for him first?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't do stand up before TikTok. I actually wasn't fully set on being a comic. I was ready to be like take the acting route.
Oh, and when was your first show?
Atlantic City, April 8th or 9th, 3 years ago.
2021.
Dude, it was fall 2020. I had like 16,000 followers on Instagram, and like comedy clubs out here started calling. And I was like, I've never done stand-up before. Like, how the fuck am I going to headline a weekend? They were like, oh, it's all good. Like, can you put together 30 minutes? I was like, you serious? Like, but that was the way the world, like people were dying for in-person ticket sales in whatever state it was legal or not mandated, right? And I'm like, this isn't out of my full-time job. Like, fuck it. Like, sure, I'll try this shit. And then my first open mic was February 2021. And then 6 weeks later, I headlined Governors, Long Island, Uncle Vinny's Down the Shore, Point Pleasant, and Atlantic City for one night at some bar, Kiss Kiss Nightclub. Shout out Matt Bridgestone. Yeah, bro. And then I had to quit. I was out of vacation days, so I quit my job from that.
Well, so how'd it go?
Good. It's I'm the wrong guy to ask on like the intricate ins and outs of stand up, because like the reality is like I've been getting booked off of my following for the most part, which is fine. There's a lot of other people doing that, but I don't get on stage as much as like the Mark Normans and Sam Morrell, like the old school, like Ham and Egger stand ups do. Because of what I was talking about earlier, just like I love the acting stuff, the video stuff, sketch shows, which is probably is not good for stand up. And I've gotten that feedback like, dude, you either got to go all in or you're not going all in.
I would assume it's hard to do like part time.
Yeah, it is. It is hard. And it's something I manage and I struggle with here and there. But at the end of the day, I still feel like I can, for better or worse, it's not an ego thing, like work when I want and like not take off 3 months for the sake of I don't want to do stand up. But if something else like more lucrative comes up, I got to pay rent, got to do that. But I get on stage as much as I possibly can, and I've been getting up more recently. But to answer your question, crowd work is definitely my comfort zone. Like just talking to the audience and fucking with them and calling people out. And I also might not have even seen that guy in the back that was being a total douche when Jesse was up there. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, she's got an eye. She can see, like veteran comics like her can see everything at the same time. They can feel, you know, 55% laughter, 45% over here. And then like I'm not even close to that level. I still feel like I'm far from being seasoned. So, you know, it's a work in progress.
There's a lot that goes into being a comic that I probably don't really realize, but I don't know if you knew, my dad saw you in like one of your first shows at Essex County Country Club.
That's how I met him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Bro,
fucking tanked.
Oh, you did?
Shows. Oh my. Private gigs are the worst. Every comic will say.
Those dudes over there. Again, I was a caddy for 10 years. So I get it. Like when you're fucking up,
that's how I met your
they're
dad.
On your ass, bro. So yeah. it didn't do well.
I mean, private gigs are hard because, private's one thing. If the audience is there for stand up, it's what you want. But, anytime an audience is not gathered and the main purpose is stand-up comedy, that goes for a charity show or a private event at a golf course, like the attention is not that we need the attention, but the setting has to be everyone's on the same page kind of thing. It's like watching a movie with someone who doesn't stop talking or constantly talking through it. It's like that, like you, all you want to do is watch, but now you have to answer questions. Once that happens, it's just a domino effect. And I'm not going to act like the setting was the reason why I tanked. Like I was like, I think a year and a half in.
Oh, just, okay.
Oh yeah. I was a baby, but that's to get back to your other point. Like you got to be okay with just sucking a dick.
Well, so like, you know, you're okay with sucking dick sometimes. Wait, so you're in this room when you say you're tanking.
We were outside too, bro.
Oh,
so
no.
Yeah. The acoustics were like,
people can't hear you.
Yeah. It was, everybody was, I should have walked around more with the mic and just like divert. That's what a veteran comic would do. They would bail on their material, their 20 or 30 minutes, and they would just start fucking with everybody that's heckling them, walking up to them with a wireless mic. And just, but I didn't have that, probably still don't have that muscle yet to where, diverting in the middle of your act is hard.
Like I can't
you
imagine.
Have to, cause you have to be reading the audience and feeling them out, while going through your material, remembering everything, obviously, and deciding whether or not it's worth to keep going down this route or to totally just wash it. But
so is this an immediate bomb or like, did they give you some slack in the beginning?
They all kind of go the same way. The private gigs all kind of go the same way. It's always you're fighting for a while unless it's quiet and like there's no like drink service or food service going on, because anytime there's a distraction or commotion, it's a lot harder to keep people's attention. I'm also like need to be more funny as well. So it's hand in hand, you know.
Were they heckling you as in like telling you to
exactly
stop,
what or? I would expect. I would have been the same way.
Oh, you would.
Bunch of drunk dads on a golf course. Yeah, like, yeah. What the fuck do they care? Some kids doing stand up. Just people book these events and they're like, we're going to get a DJ and then we're going to do trivia. Oh, we got to get a comedian. I mean, how do we not get a okay, who knows a comedian? And then everyone starts, well, I follow this kid. You know, it just kind of turns into this, which is fine. Look, you got to pay rent. I got to pay rent. It was a paying gig. You take it, you do your best, you learn from it. But,
My dad heckling you? Was he the one?
He was great. He was great, man. He was like one of the first guys I met actually after getting off stage, which was a brick, God knows what, gazebo or some shit. But it's all good, man. It's being okay with just, you know, not to sound cliche, but just failing and failing and failing. And the antithesis of social media, which is just not caring what anybody thinks. Like once you can get like through that or get a grasp of that, like what's important, I think, becomes more clear. You
right.
Know?
Well, so, I mean,
how about you, bro? Talking about myself the whole time.
About me. This well, is yeah, not. But, this but is not.
I'm fascinated by your you and your dad, your story and shit.
Well, I appreciate it. Seriously. Well, honestly, man, it's fun.
My dad's up my ass. Hey, when are we doing something? When are we? I gotta get out of this fucking corporate shit. Your mother's driving me nuts. When are we gonna start something?
I'm like, telling you, bro. Stick a camera in his face, and if it does well, it'll keep doing well. People love the family stuff. People love the father and son, the mother daughter. It's just so wholesome, even if it's not, even if it's your dad fucking yelling at you, a father and son together, I'll watch that. If your dad was ripping into you, I would watch that video.
There's truth to that for sure. And not just because you're biased, but because like I know from experience, like anytime I post my parents for some reason, not for some reason, but it's like pulling the curtain back on, like, not that we're celebrities by any means or famous, like who we think is famous, but you're pulling the curtain back on who this dude is with followers, and people are clearly maybe that's not the only reason why, but they're characters for sure.
People love, I think people are so enamored by the past generation and then generations, because I feel like the farther back you go, the more authentic it becomes, because what we just talked about, social media was never impacting. So our dads are our dads, and seeing that purity is almost like refreshing, because you put the camera where like one of our faces, it's always an act. Where you see the camera in dad's face, he's so unfiltered, doesn't give a fuck. He says whatever's on his mind. You're like, oh my God, he just said that.
It's definitely maturity related too. Cause like,
they don't give a shit.
They also just don't, like, for example, what we think is funny. Sometimes we think I can do that or be that or communicate that. So therefore, sometimes when you're on stage on camera, you think this is only going to work if this, like, we don't know ourselves well enough yet in this world to be confident like dads are, because they're like, this fucking thing, my dad's font's like 72. He's got readers on. He doesn't get it, but he scrolls, and in the, they have no reason to force anything. To your point.
Well, it's funny because my dad is on social, right? Obviously for the past 4 years, and I've seen him change, and not in a bad way. It's just inevitable. The hardest part sometimes is keeping him who he once was. You know what I mean? I don't want to change him. I don't want him to feel like he has to change. There's a reason they fell in love with you in the beginning. Stay like that as long as you possibly can.
Can you give me an example of something? Like, he's my dad's age. He's 58. 58. Dude, holy shit.
Looks great, man.
Botox? No,
I'm nothing, kidding. Bro. Listen, I believe it. I don't know what it is.
I met him in person.
TRT, nothing.
He's a healthy dude, man.
Yeah.
Props to senior.
But I would say, like, because again, everybody sees and hears feedback, so they want to do better. So you hear feedback about something you had said or what they want you to say. Now it's the camera's face, and I've said to him all the time, I'm like, yeah, like, do that again. Just like, stop acting. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, you think you just did, you know, like, the whole like fake voice. Like, don't do that. Like, do what you actually would
do. How long did it take you to get him to turn that off, whatever that was? Because that's the biggest, but how much of it's hard because we know him more than anybody online will.
Yeah.
So it's like, but then again, what if someone was in our ear when we first started making videos? Like, what, you fucking stop acting. Like,
right.
It's just.
That's why I think back.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem, is because there is a balance. Like, I will tell him, hey, the audience likes when you do this, so do that. And then I'm also in a different ear, say, oh, don't act.
Yeah.
So he's on camera like, the fuck Which do you want one? Me to do?
Right. No, pick a side. You're right.
So I do take some of the blame, but I'm also like, look, man, I want you to look good on camera. I'm never telling you to do something or not do something because I want to see you look bad.
Right.
You know? So he takes sometimes like, let me do my thing.
I'm like, for sure.
All right, go ahead.
It's definitely an awkward, like, because my dad's come to me with video ideas before, and we've done some of them, and to be funny ideas or good ideas. And like, I will naturally, like you, feel like I have to direct him for like, you're overdoing it. Dude, like, what, like, stop doing this or that. And I think just because they're our dads, like, it's hard for them. Not taking orders from their kid, but like, I fucking know what's funny. Like, you know, there's a little bit of that.
Yeah, dude.
I saw a video of you impersonating your dad, and the one that was the fun, because I've done my dad before a couple times in a similar way. The one that just had me dying was the just the passive aggressive, like, get down. He's like, you're down on the dock.
Yeah.
I was dying. That was
he's
great.
Like, you see this? Oh, but, no. He's like, oh, I have a great idea. And my sister's like, nah.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, we're going to do what you want to do. Because that was yesterday. He had an idea. He had a fucking like watermelon. Here's what he does. He'll give me an idea, which is like an inkling of an idea. And I'm like, okay, expand on that for me. It's like, that's all I got. I'm like, okay, then let's do this. And he's like, okay, let's do what you want to do then. I'm like, no, you have to give me more than just, here's a watermelon.
Props to you for like navigating that gap, if you will, of like, especially any boomer and any millennial when it comes to social and what works. You know, it's, because at the end of the day, all of our algorithms are custom tailored.
Yeah.
So what we think is funny, or what we see as funny, this is what's funny today in today's world. You and I know it's a trend, it's an algorithm, I'm in a good mood, so I'm seeing this, I'm in a shit mood, so I'm seeing that.
Yep.
But our dads are like, this is, he put this, I'm like, dad, there's literally billions of videos in the air right now. Funny can be anything you want it to be.
Yeah.
But I know it's not going to be funny as you not being authentic.
Right.
So it's like that I've had it a couple times with my dad because we fucked around with some stuff, but I brought you and your dad up multiple times to That's him funny. About like some, father son esque, podcast, and, timing's not there yet, but he's all in. He's like, I got a studio guy in Manhattan. I'm like, wait, what? Like, you do? Like,
you gotta get him on camera, man. Cause you never know. Even, and here's like
we'll do some tests, not tests.
Get him here.
Like, I'm a network executive, but yeah, maybe. Bro.
Dude, we got a studio. Use it.
This is sick.
Yeah.
This is sick.
At the end of the day, dude, like, listen, I got to give my dad the credit he deserves, because on camera, he's one of the best guys. Because I've done this for other people, right? I've helped them with ideas, and I film them, and it's not easy. If I come up to you and ask you a question about whatever you're doing, and now you got to explain it to me on camera, it's very hard. he does it super well. And my buddy Gavin, who's a world champion powerlifter, has done it. He does it better than anybody. I asked him a question about weightlifting. He can speak for a minute with extreme clarity, doesn't stutter, and keeps it moving. And then my dad is just funny. Like, he just says things sometimes. I'm like, I'll look back and I'd be like, that shit was funny, man. You got a talent.
So you kind of just, I mean, a lot of it was communicating what you just mentioned, like what's going to work, what's acting, what's not acting, being yourself. But a lot of it sounds like it was just being okay with turning on the mic and just seeing what happens. And then you found funny from just the open air of it is kind of what you're saying.
Yeah. The open air is exactly what it is, right? Okay. So if I'm asking you a question about how do you make a cocktail and he's making a cocktail, the cocktail's three ingredients. That could be a 10-second video if we really want it to be. Right. People are staying because a dad is teaching his son something and he's doing it in an entertaining way. So sometimes he'll say something and like, yeah, don't say that. And then he'll get angry. And then sometimes I'll catch him when he's, you know, like that's the him getting a little bit irritated, I think is hilarious. It's like, I'll sometimes do it for my own fun.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And then he'll get me irritated.
Too, obviously.
You'll see him, like he'll flip the camera on me sometimes and then he'll get me irritated and then I'll get pissed off. But it's fine. People don't want to see that. People don't want to see a son get mad at a dad.
Oh, you know what I mean? Other way around though. Yeah, of course.
Because yeah, they see it as like.
I feel like the Staten Island dad or New York Italian dad is like, that's a subculture of its own on TikTok. Like the kids filming their dads just screaming, Anthony!
Yeah.
I feel like I see it every
What's the video where the, oh my God, the cash sheetrock up a staircase and they keep dropping it or something. That's the, or they do the pool. I think it's the same dad.
Yeah, I thought 100%. 100%. Yeah, no, you're totally right. It's
Or playing baseball with your dad, having for catch. Sure. Those are the best. Those are the best. And I think those are the, you know, little inspirations for, because I send that shit to my dad all the time. That was me playing catch with my dad. I throw it over his head. He would say, one more time, we're done, going inside. I would do it again. The faces he would make of just like pure anger and frustration.
The warm up to like start jogging to get the ball.
And he'd be like, go get it.
I didn't see this video. I assume there was one, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right. It's just those little things that we can all relate to.
Right.
And I think that's what people appreciate about, I'm 28 years old and I'm still having these same, not arguments, but conversations with dad about making cocktails. You know, it's
I think it gets easier to, not easier, but, you know, we grow up, they turn into a kid in a way, like as they get older, which I don't know if you've noticed that, but like, not that they're, I feel like I'm parenting them, but like you, as you grow up, I think you just see a little kid in your parents in a way. And it's, it can definitely get fun, but, in my head, I'm like, it's such a big commitment. I don't want to, I haven't started a podcast for the sole purpose of, I think there's a ton of them and it's not a bad thing, but I don't want to half-ass it. That's my excuse. I want to like give everything I can to it. Never miss an episode, not write everything out, but just have a plan, like approach it like another leg of this business, if you will, that I mentioned earlier. And it's like, it's hard, man. It takes a lot of time. It takes a shit ton of time. I don't want to let him down either. Yeah. I might get booked for something. I got to go away for a couple of weeks and film something.
I would get him in videos first. You know what I mean? Like have him in 30-second spurts.
It's hard being in Chicago. Him being in Chicago.
Oh, fuck. Yeah.
But you're totally right. There's definitely some missed opportunities for content when I'm home. And I'm home a lot. Just for, you know, close family and gigs work too. So.
Think about the Scarlatta brothers, bro. When their dad is on camera,
he's got his own fucking handle now.
And the they're funny as shit. But their dad is so funny.
Beppas. Yeah.
They're incredible. And then playing off of that is when they are filming him make sauce and they're like, just not too much garlic. And he freaks out like he's
you
been
pay
down
for the fucking garlic. Yeah, huh?
Yeah. He really
dude,
is.
Dude, you
want to
wrestle something funny? The only dude, I guess the only dad of a creator my dad has met was him. And it was at Sebastian's premiere.
Oh,
my,
really?
My dad flew in for it. He was my plus one. The girlfriend was okay with it, which she really didn't have a choice. But I thought that'd be cool for Pops, being a De Niro guy and everything. We're in line going in. And it was just me, my dad, Scarlatta's, and I think it's Joe, right? Joe Sr.
Yeah.
It was fucking hilarious, dude. It was like a scene out of a movie. bunch of guys in suits, like
he's a character.
Red carpet. What can we do? Is it,
yeah, you know, they're the funny. Thing? I thought they were little. There's skits now about the Yankees.
Oh, have dude, I just saw one yesterday. They're doing the Knicks now too. It's one of the foot tap starts. The doors open, bro. I fucking love that.
That's the opinion of like when something's going well, keep doing it. Yeah. Keep juicing it as much as you, until that stuff starts getting boring. Like until the Yankees start losing, you should do that for every win they have. Every video does well.
You're right.
You know what I mean? It keeps people in. Like I'll watch it. I'll like it before I even see the video because I know I liked the past 10 that they did.
It's a great point. That's
they get more characters point. Involved. Like the guy Botch, I've never met him. He's fucking hilarious. Yeah,
he's a good dude. He's a good dude.
That dude is one of the funniest guys I've seen.
Yeah, yeah. They make some good shit. Yeah. And it's, I never thought about that because honestly, I've seen it 3, 4, 5 of them too. And I haven't even thought about the fact that it's the same thing. But it's theoretically the
same shit,
right?
Every time.
But
get new characters in.
It's fucking them, dude. It's not, that's my probably setback is like I psych myself out with shit with the content and stuff. It's like you got to just, to your point, just go with it.
I think the easiest thing for anybody to do on social is like talk to somebody that likes your content enough but is honest with you. So like if I sat there and watched your content, I'd say, look, this isn't even me talking. Look at all your videos that do well. They all probably have a common theme to them. I think this is the funniest thing you do. Keep doing this. Don't reinvent the wheel. People try to get too creative and too trendy. Yeah. And chasing a trend is like we said, like you're going to lose yourself with that.
For sure.
You are the trend. You know what I mean? Like you started the trend of the Sebastian Maniscalco accent.
Yeah.
So you could start a new trend or you can go back to the trend you started and it probably will still hit. You know what I mean?
Good point, dude.
I can listen to you impersonate Maniscalco or Christopher Walken's. Like, you do these things really, really well. Keep fucking doing it. If you brought Christopher Walken's in every different setting, I'm watching that because I liked him at the grocery store.
Damn.
I'm going to like him at the gas station. Or I'm going to like him at
I think I've forgotten that for sure. And a lot of it, too, is just is stand-up, translating to stand-up. Because what's happened for me is, like, people will come and, you know, again, based off my following, that's kind of how I'm selling tickets. And they'll expect... not a Frank Caliendo set, but at the very least they're like, well, you didn't do Sebastian. It's not really, if you will, professionally acceptable to impersonate other comedians on stage.
Really?
Is what I've learned. Yeah. Now there's other comics that say, fuck that. Do your thing. Who gives a shit? It's a different time. Like you're a one man show too. Fuck them. Do what you want. But, I the impression stuff does the best. It's just hard when that gets to the stage. I don't do impressions the entire set. Like I'd say 80% of it's not impressions. So that balance is something I'm not complaining. I'm grateful for the situation I'm in, but it's a work in progress. You know, I'm 3 years in. I got to try to be like high level view. That's not fucking long at all.
Not at
for
all.
For any of this shit. You
is
know?
Is Full that time. Like, is that like an insult to a comedian when you first, I don't understand.
It's not an insult.
It's like leeching off of them type of thing.
I don't really know what it is. I just know that's the feedback that I've gotten. And a lot of it too, in their defense, is like the art form of stand-up is the unique thoughts and delivery and message and communication and physical being of this one dude. So who is this Nikki Smigs dude? Is he just the guy who does another comic?
Right.
So that is probably the best way that I've looked at it is like, I would like to, not that I'm too good to impersonate someone, but like, I would like to explore like the onstage therapy session that it's kind of called. And like, what do I want to fucking talk about?
Yeah.
But then again, people want to, you know, they come and like, they have a good time. They're not like pissed off, but like meet and greets after shows are like, why didn't you do it? And it's hard sometimes. You just got it's a balance, bro. It's all balance.
It's almost like, you know, Shane
like,
Gillis.
Like, where the fuck's your dad? That's the only reason why I came.
I know. I get it, man. Sorry.
He's out. No, I'm kidding.
But that's funny too, is like, these are things you have to identify moving forward too. If it's a separate thing like the podcast, you gotta let people know like, hey, look, this isn't what, you shouldn't expect this because it's not going to be that.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you don't even want people to be let down. If they came to your show to see one thing, they saw something different, they might have liked that different thing if they knew what to expect.
That's what's hard about like selling tickets off of a following, because it's, I feel like I have to be myself on stage, be myself behind a camera.
Yeah, that is
but
tough.
Adhere to a trend, but then again, be aware of, like, if I want to get brand dollars, I can't say what I said on stage. You know, so like
it's separate though.
It is
separate brands,
but it's just you're writing for two different scenarios, and sometimes they cross because an audience is common denominator too in that regard. Whether it's like someone buying a ticket, or they, you know, mentioned something from being in a show about seeing a video and stuff like that. So
I noticed that
it's still fresh, you know.
Still very fresh.
Just for everybody, like not even just me, but just like this world of stand up, like people doing stand up because of like Joe Gorga. Like,
he does stand up?
Yeah.
Is he funny?
Yeah, he's got his own. I've opened for him a few times a couple of years ago.
Really?
Yeah, he's got his own. It's very similar to kind of not what I do, but he. Talk about the show a lot. He's a storyteller. Talks about the show a lot, you know. But yeah, his audience loves him.
No shit. I never realized that.
Yeah.
That is a dip. They say it about like dancers too. Like, the you know, everybody's a TikTok dancer. And then can you choreograph an actual dance? Can you stay, you know, synchronized with other dancers? Most of the time, the answer is no. So it's a hard transition.
Right.
And these casting, you know, shows or calls normally don't go that well for the people that are used to dancing for 15 seconds. I'm assuming it's the same thing for somebody like you or these actors. Acting for 30 seconds is easy. Right. Acting for an hour, 2 hours, not easy.
It's like if they get booked. I know this from Meals by Cooge. I'm sure you know Cooge, mm-hmm. obviously. Like he's gotten some acting gigs, and he's Cooge in the movie. Like, that's how big he's gotten on social. Like, there's no acting needed. The directors have told him, like, just do your Cooge thing.
Yeah.
Like, which is insane.
Well, they like, probably also which know what else would he do.
Right. But like just that the concept of like you look at like an Ian McKellen who didn't get shit until he was 65, like 45 years busting his ass to be an actor. And now like I'm not talking shit. Obviously, it's all he deserves it. Cooge deserves it. But it's an unprecedented dynamic to where whether someone's a fan, a director's a fan of somebody, or a stand-up club owner's a fan, or if it's just, this is a business decision and we need to sell tickets, we need to get box office numbers up. Like, people go to social now. It's unprecedented. So when I say it's fresh, it's like, we're still exploring how this is going to, like, pieces are going to fall, you know? It's wild.
That seems to make way more sense though. Like, if you have somebody online, like Cougine, or yeah. I know him and Lil Mo were on French Montana's new album. They do a skit. No, it's fucking shit. Hilarious. Really? Yeah. They're just in a booth together. Like, they're talking shit to one another. And like, your sister, the same thing. But like, why would you ever want them to be anybody else? I want to see them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's with stand up. It's just, it's a little bit, it's like the
stand up is different.
It's the goth heavy metal genre of all the entertainment. It's just either it's pride. It's the beauty of this art form is such because of this process. And when you take someone that's never done it out of their parents' basement, mm-hmm. who's doing it for money, we're going to ruin this art form. Louis C.K. had a great quote. And part of it too is on the club owners. Like, they want to book someone off social. Like, it's not like all the internet guys are being attacked by comics. Like, it's just how the business has evolved. And like the people that have been doing it for a while get a little threatened or just not used to change. But Louis C.K. has a great quote that resonated with me where he says, anybody who's trying to be a comedian and or be funny online, you want to be very careful about tailoring your content to an algorithm. Because what you're doing, he literally does this. He goes, you're shaving parts away from you to tailor to this machine to get XYZ results. And it's like, that's as real as it gets, you know? It's because Sebastian, for me, for like, you know, shit ton of views, shit ton of followers. And then people start showing up like, why don't you do Sebastian? And I get feedback, stop doing them. Now I got to stop kind of posting him because I don't want people to be coming to shows being like, where the fuck's Sebastian? So these are not huge problems by any means, but it's just a new dynamic that like so many different levels of entertainer have not seen before, you know?
This may be a dumb question because I'm from the outside looking in. Why don't you become like an impersonation guy? If those are your best videos online.
Yeah.
Is that not what you like to do?
Not really. I mean, I do like it. I you know, the saddest thing in life is wasted talent. It's probably my favorite quote, but I don't love it enough to do 1 hour of voices. Kind of a combo of both.
Yeah.
So we'll see, man.
So like, who is a big impersonation?
Frank Caliendo.
Right. Yeah, that's the only one I know though. Like he does a full, he'll do an hour.
Yeah. He's one of the few guys that their entire, Rich Little was an old school, but back in the day, one of those guys, but I would say the bigger one, I mean, Jim Carrey was definitely one of them. Dana Carvey. Missing a couple, but like, look at Shane Gillis's set. Did you see his last special?
He's so funny.
He does a great job. He's not an impressionist at all, but like almost every joke is a voice,
right?
Or an impression.
Yeah.
The Australian, I don't want to say for censorship reasons. I don't know if it 9/11, like the Australian 9/11.
Yeah.
I don't know if YouTube's on your ass for anything. Not yet, because I've been there. It's not fun. And then the Trump thing, like Trump I can't do Trump anymore. It's like Gillis is better. Every count, Gillis is better. Gillis is like, good for him.
Gillis is the best.
It's fucking hilarious.
He is.
It's fucking hilarious. So it's, I wouldn't say I would like to have a set modeled like Shane Gillis's, but like if you've seen, do you know Dana Carvey? He was on Saturday Night Live. He's got a Netflix special.
Yep.
Came out in 2016 called Straight White Male 60. If you watch his set, like that's probably what I would be closest to. It's a lot of impressions, a lot of voices, but it's not the entire, there's a story. He's taking you along a journey.
Right.
You know? So yeah, we'll see, bro.
That's gotta be a hard, you know, I'm assuming now content for you is just a top funnel for driving traffic to a show.
It's a combination of things for sure. But that cut you off.
I'm curious how you go through this process. Is like,
yeah, it's hard. I don't have it figured out. I really don't. I go through bouts of like this, just forgetting that, like, I don't know how this works, but at the end of the day, what's always worked best for me is just being not vulnerable, like talking about your problems, but like just fucking make fun of yourself for why you're hesitant to do X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
It always works.
Yeah.
Always.
If you had to pick one, you know, of the things you do, acting, live comedy, skits, which one do you love doing the most?
Dude, I started taking acting classes in the fall and I have never been so attentive for 10 hours in a desk. Like I hated school.
Me too.
2.5 GPA. Was not for me, but like 10 hours, 8 hours, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in a Manhattan, you know, conference room or something. It was like, it was great. Probably acting, to be honest. But then again, stand up, when you have a good show, man, like, holy fuck. And you get off stage, like there's, I don't sleep after like the really, really good ones, the really bad ones. I don't sleep either, but like the really, really good ones, man, like, there's no fucking feeling like it.
Yeah.
You get a room like Governor's on Long Island. It's like 210 people.
I want to hear. Talk me through like your biggest and best show.
Biggest audience I've ever done. I wasn't headlining. You know Sal Valentinetti, Sal the Voice.
Yeah.
I opened for him.
What was he doing?
At the Round. Westbury. Old Westbury on Long Island. 2,000 people. I did like 15, 20 minutes. At the Round. They call it the Round. I forget what the old Westbury Theater, I think it's called. Does that sound right? I don't know. But that was fun. I mean, old school Italian audience, like
perfect.
You know, it worked out. Sal was happy with it, but it doesn't really faze me, like the size of the room or the public speaking part. But then again, you know, in like 10, 20, 30 seconds, if you're going to have a good one or a bad one. If you're going to have a bad one, like it's the longest 15 minutes, 20, 30 minutes of your life, you know? I wasn't the headliner, but that's probably one of the bigger audiences.
And now when you say it went really well, the crowd work was good or you were just flowing on your jokes?
Yeah, I felt good. Material worked with that audience. which I think Sal, he's no idiot. Like, he knows if he's going to ask a comic to open for him versus a band or another orchestra or something, however that works. It better be someone for his audience. You know, at the end of the day, he doesn't really care, but he's very Rat Pack, old school. Like, you know, tell jokes, sing songs. I love that shit. So, yeah, jokes worked. I also lived on Long Island for 6 months before I moved to Brooklyn. I, my buddy I met through podcasting was basically like, dude, if you want to move out to New York and your audience is here, I leave Chicago. I know you're just quit your job. Like, if you want to pay like $750 a month, like a spare bedroom, we'll have you. And I was like, okay. So that's kind of how it started. So I got a good feel for Long Island when it came to like material and shit like that. And it was just a comfortable setting for that one, I guess.
Now, why wouldn't you just like follow a guy like Sal around and open for him?
I would say I'm close to doing something like that. Like, just, I've had a couple conversations with some comedians actually where I might be in the very near future. I never expect anything more than one job. If they want to make it a regular thing, great. If not, that's great too. I don't think Sal has comics still open for him. Sometimes it's just like we've been friends for a year, 18 months, 2 years, and like have a good time together. Like, open for my show. Get up there. Go do like, sometimes just like that too. You know what I mean? It's not even about the money. It's just about, it's fun for me, man. It's fucking fun performing. So
have you done comedy in Chicago?
Yeah.
How are the audiences different?
Holy shit. Jersey and Long Island are probably my favorite places to do stand up. You can just fuck with everybody and just like be self-deprecating, make fun of the crowd. Like, there've been some sets where I've done like an hour, not a ton, and like 30 minutes is all crowd work because we're just having a ball together. Mm. That's not as common in Chicago. It is, but it's, there's something about that New York. Just, I posted something online from Bananas Comedy Club in East Rutherford. Where I'm like, New Jersey's the only place you can do stand up where I can literally tell the audience you're all a bunch of fucking scumbags and you'll laugh. And like right before I said you'll laugh, like they started laughing. I'm like, see, you just, you're all laughing. No, not really in many other places can you just roast the shit out of each other. So I don't think you can really get away with that in the Midwest as much. But that's probably the biggest difference I can think of.
Yeah.
A lot more Italians out here. That's for sure.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess cause it's easier to get over here from.
It's just, yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, for sure. There's only like 500,000, 600,000, which is a shit ton in Chicago.
Right.
But, New York's got millions.
This seems to be a really good hub for comedy because of that reason. You can work a room and learn how to work a room because we don't really give a shit.
I mean, New York's like, it's New York and LA.
Yeah.
For stand up. The Comedy Cellar, it's probably like the Mecca out here. And then
have you performed there?
No, not yet. Got to get the chops up before that. But in the Comedy Store in LA, probably like the West Coast make it spot, you know? Yeah.
And you've been here, what, since 2021, right?
Fall 21. Yeah. 2.5 years.
Because I got to ask, pizza here versus Chicago, better or worse?
God. I'm going to get crucified for this, but I love New York. I love New York pizza. Yeah. I mean, Chicago, here's the problem. Back with the stereotype things about like Arlington Heights, Jersey, you know, greater New York City area. Everyone thinks we only eat deep dish out here.
I would assume.
Yeah. I have it once a year.
Really?
Maybe twice a year. A lot of people eat it more often than that. But like most of the people I know, my family, it's like when the Bears play the Packers, like twice, which is twice a year. Like, it's just like you get it for an event like that or like, you know, a party or something. But Chicago style pizza is just thin crust tavern style. Ooh. Cut into squares. And it's fucking amazing. The only difference is just the water is different. So the bread's not as crispy. So you can't have a bigger slice. So you cut it into squares, but it's the same fucking thing as a, not the same thing, obviously, but no, I love New York pizza, bro. I love it.
What's the best pizza in Chicago?
Probably Lou Malnati's.
Is that deep dish?
They have both, but their thin crust is fucking bomb. Lou Malnati's, Giordano's is the other deep dish spot that's solid. In our neck of the woods in the suburbs, there's a place called Tortorisi's, which Portnoy was just at, actually.
Oh, really?
Like a week or two ago, yeah. Just very basic, thin crust, sausage, onion.
You know. I've never had a deep dish pizza. It's baked, right?
It's like 45 dish, minutes to an hour to pop out. Yeah, yeah.
That's ridiculous.
That's what everybody says. And look, I've definitely like adapted to the culture of like, I'm just getting a slice and I'm walking to the Subway. Like everyone jokes, but like, I fucking love that, bro. Yeah. It's like a little piece of flatbread. It's a cracker.
How could you not like it?
It's fucking, dude, I could eat, Joe's is my favorite here.
Yeah.
Holy fuck, dude. I could eat four of those things. And they're so small, but it's just, everything about it's perfect.
Man.
Everything about it fucking
New York. Who would have thought you'd say New York pizza's better?
Ah, dude. It's the bread. It really is the bread. It's the, what do they say? The water is harder here or whatever. So therefore you have harder bagels.
Yep.
There's been a few.
Crispier crust.
Oh, dude, it's the best. There's been a few places in Chicago that have tried like the flying in the New York water. And not all of them really make
doesn't
it.
Doesn't work,
it's
right?
A bit different. Yeah.
What other food is Chicago known for?
Beef and hot dogs.
Okay.
Italian beef. And glizzies, as you guys call them.
Like that. For whatever reason, they call them.
I don't know why.
That's a New York thing, too, by the way. We're not in New York. So New Jersey, New York slang is very.
Like, that's right.
The New York slang is a whole nother world. It's only 30 minutes from here.
What the fuck is it? Why is it glizzy?
They just make up words. They literally make up words. The Bronx makes up a lot of the iconic words like the dead ass and
seriously
that's all them they
dead ass
that.
Is the Bronx
that started in the Bronx I would say Brooklyn Bronx
holy
area
shit, I thought that one. Was like just West Coast
no they started everything you hear
no way
yeah because they're characters
I believe that I just didn't think they were like
the video where the guy goes around and they do like the street talks like the bing bong that's all that
side talk
what's
his name is Nems right. Gorilla Nems?
Yeah. I don't know where they find
somebody
these
else. Yeah, they crush it. They crush it.
They're very authentic. Like they just say things and you're like, wait, how do they even come up with that?
I love it.
And they're like 12 years old saying this shit.
That's probably my favorite part about being here versus Chicago is just like characters per capita, bro.
Yeah. Like, characters per capita over there. Can't beat it.
Here, Jersey too, bro. Yeah. Everyone's right here. Everyone's right here. There's not much bullshit. There's no Minnesota, like the Minnesota nice thing. I don't know if you ever heard that.
Yeah,
it is kind of a good, for lack of a better example, metaphor for like the Midwest, you know, are they just being nice or I don't want to play that game. I'm not playing that. For me here culturally is just my speed. Love my family back home. My Wisconsin family, obviously, but, it's also just like my job has to have me here or LA. So,
yeah.
But I fucking love it here. So.
Well, I was going to say to you, like when you performed at Essex County is the epitome of like New Jersey, right? Oh, so like the tough accents, the tough Italian guy, they're no joke over there. So when you're not doing well, they'll tell you, and I'm sure they did. It's intimidating. You know, again, like just being a caddy, you don't want to fuck up with those guys.
You love the culture here until you get paid to make those guys laugh. You know, it's like, how big are your nuts? How big are your fucking nuts?
Dude, you know? I can't believe you did that, to be honest with you.
I mean, look, at the end of the day, I got no problem saying like that I was new. I still am new. And like a couple of years later, I'll be able to say, fuck you, if I can get them to laugh.
Exactly.
And they'll laugh at me saying, fuck you.
You got to earn their respect over there though.
Which is, I love that. If it takes some time, it takes some time, you know?
Yeah, so. Man. So what's next? What's next for Nikki Smigs?
I'm actually in New Brunswick this weekend, the Stress Factory.
No shit.
I got one show on Saturday. My manager's up my ass right now to promote it. Holy fuck. But New Brunswick, wherever the hell.
I was like, yeah, you up your ass.
Stress Factory, one show Saturday. I got a private show in Bay Ridge on Friday night at some restaurant, which is will be a blast.
Though you don't like the private shows.
Italian restaurant.
Different.
I've been there before. Okay. You kind of know the audience. It's not really, it's a little bit easier.
I got connected with some nice Italian restaurants in Jersey.
You got to connect me?
I do.
Oh, that'd be great.
Crush it. There's a couple spots I have in mind right now, like Forte's, remember we filmed. That would be an Essex County guy. You probably perform for him at Essex County. I'll say, hey,
is he a member?
Ignore that. Yeah.
Is he really?
I'll say, ignore that performance. He's actually hilarious.
Nah, I don't think people really give a shit, but yeah. I mean, they do. Fuck.
No, you do. The crowd work would be great.
Oh, dude, I love all that shit. I love, yeah.
We'll talk off camera.
Tally, beautiful.
Cool.
Sounds good to me, bro.
Well, listen, man, I actually end every podcast on a little bit of a deeper note, asking the guest two questions. In your life, doesn't
like we
have
didn't
to be,
hit deep earlier already.
Yeah, we'll be back, so we're going to revert back to being pretty
go
deep.
Ahead. I love it.
In your life, doesn't have to be comedy related. What has been, you know, the lowest of your lows? And let's follow that up with what has been the highest of your highs.
Lowest of lows. Like lowest of lows? Oh, fuck, man. Probably it has a positive upswing, but seeing like the pain in my family's eyes when I was like pretty close to suicidal. That was horrible. That's what actually gave me energy to get out of the depression state I was in five, six years ago, was like seeing my family, the love they had and the pain that came from that was like, I got special thing here in my family, and they deserve better. The flip side, to their credit as well, highest of highs is probably I've never been asked this question. You're like, yeah, that's why I fucking ask them.
No shit.
I mean, selfishly, just, I want to say the job, but you know what? There's nothing like Christmas Eve in an Italian family. Everybody's there. Everybody's healthy. Like, it's probably the best memory of my childhood that, like, I still am in, like, denial that I can't recreate because people have passed and, like, the hosts have changed. But there's something nostalgic and timeless about an Italian Christmas Eve with your family and your cousins and friends coming by and just like the circus that it is. It's like probably where I got introduced to the most comedians in one room my entire life, you know? So I was going to say the job, and that's the high, but it really started at like a Christmas Eve. So
it's a great answer.
Family, both ends of the stick.
That's, you know? Awesome, man.
Yeah, dude.
Well, thanks for coming, bro.
Appreciate it.
That's it. Like, subscribe, share, all that good stuff, guys. Cheers.